Have your recent airline or airport experiences been good or bad? Do you look forward to or do you dread flying these days? How can we make our flying experiences over the holidays and beyond the best they can be? We'll talk with a guest from the Association for Airline Passenger Rights who will welcome your questions and your stories this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, November 28th. Our guest group is involved in a couple of national efforts to improve the flying experience. One calls for airlines to end hidden fees and restore air travel comparison shopping, and another campaign calls for reforming the TSA, or the Transportation Security Administration. It endorses the use of private security firms at airports. We will welcome your questions and your stories and experiences, good or bad, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Brandon Mixotta. He is Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, which advocates for fairer customer service and accessibility standards in the airline industry. Also wants to improve passenger satisfaction. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So you've got a lot going on these days.
We do, and thank you for having me. Always a joy to be your guest.
Well, it's always good to have you. So let's talk first about the hidden fee thing. This is when I'm trying to figure out which airline ticket to buy, but I don't know if I'm going to get charged extra for this seat or that seat or luggage and the like.
Yeah, it's becoming a big problem, and unfortunately, it's kind of like the tarmac rule, Joy, that we fought for, that for over about 12 years, the airline said they would self-police and they would put in place a policy that would work, and they did nothing. And finally, the Department of Transportation had to step in and enforce this type of, these long tarmac delays. And we're seeing the same thing with these hidden fees. It's been going on for 5 years now. And in some cases, you have travel agents who aren't being provided the full information about fees. You have airlines, in terms of competitive pricing, they're not allowing their flights and their pricing to be posted on some of these third-party websites where you could book flights like Travelocity or Expedia. And then you also just have the whole confusion over these fees, and we call them hidden fees because you think you're booking a ticket for $250, you show up at the airport, and you're getting charged for luggage to your destination and home, and before you know it, you're actually spending $350.
Yeah, so what is it that you're calling for?
Well, there's a couple of organizations that we are supporting, the Business Traveler Coalition, and there's the Open Skies Alliance, and they're pushing for government intervention at this point. And there is a online petition through the White House's new We the People initiative that's calling for people to say, hey, enough is enough. As a consumer, we have the right to know what we're buying. And, buying an airline ticket is just like buying a refrigerator or a car. You have the right to know what you're paying for, not showing up at an airport thinking, you've paid X and come to find out if you want to get to where you want to go, you've got to pay Y for it. That's just not right.
Yeah, so what is your advice for the casual passenger who may not be aware of this right now? Is there anything, we can do right now to not get hosed, I guess?
Well, yeah. I mean, the best thing you can do certainly is if you're on the website booking a ticket, to really surf around on the site and look up baggage fees to see, are you being charged $25 for the first bag, $15 for the second bag? Do you get a bag for free? For example, Southwest does not charge you baggage fees. But there's other fees beyond. There's other fees that the airlines are charging beyond baggage fees. They range from pet fees if you're traveling with a pet. If you have an unaccompanied minor, even though the unaccompanied minor has already purchased a ticket, you have to pay a fee on top of that. Change of flight fee. If you want to change your flight, unless you purchased an unrestricted ticket, you have to pay an additional fee. So, you know, surf around on the airline's website to see, you know, where is the information about their fees. Or if you're on the phone with the airline, ask them very explicitly, you know, what fees do I need to expect if I'm flying? Because it can be, unless you take the time to do it, you could very well be in for a surprise.
Yeah. Well, do you think some of these fees are worth the cost, or are they all just trying to soak us?
Joy, here's a perfect example. I purchased a ticket on U.S. Airways for about $130. It was a one-way ticket. Something came up, could not take the trip. For me to use that ticket now, it's not like I still retain the value of that ticket. I still have $130 credit with U.S. Airways. But for me to rebook that ticket, U.S. Airways will charge me $150, $20 more than the original fare.
Wow.
So, you know, that just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, if we're going to talk about the market, you know, dictating, you know, what fees are or what prices are, yes, absolutely. We as consumers believe in that. If there's a popular destination such as Fort Lauderdale in the winter months up here in the Northeast, absolutely you should be paying a little bit more. But to charge somebody $150 to change a $130 ticket just doesn't make any sense.
Well, it seems most the airlines are doing this, except maybe Southwest with the baggage fees. Why are they all doing this, and why not just be upfront about it?
It's a cash cow, Joy. They are making billions with a B, billions and billions of dollars. They are experiencing, obviously, some financial pressures with the industry changing as a whole, low-cost competitors such as Southwest trying to drive down prices, the high cost of jet fuel. You know, a lot of things are driving up the cost of doing business, so they're looking for additional revenue. We understand the airlines have to make a business. They're not a social service agency providing a free service. They're in business to make a profit. But it's one thing to tell a passenger you're going to be charged $350 to get from point A to point B. It's a totally different thing, Joy, to say you're going to be charged $250 when you book the ticket and then come to find out if you really want to get to where you're going, you got to cough up another $100.
Yeah. You also have another campaign that you launched to reform the TSA. What's going on there?
You know, Joy, I think TSA right now ranks about as popular as the Internal Revenue Service, mm-hmm. and there is actually polling data to suggest that. You will very rarely find anybody who has not heard of a horror story or just an unbelievable story of the treatment of a passenger. You know, it's enough is enough. You know, we certainly understand the need of safety when you fly. You ask any passenger, they absolutely will rank passenger safety as a top priority. However, there's no reason that we have to be humiliated or surrender our 14th Amendment rights under the Constitution and, to be exposed to some of the treatment by these TSA agents. And quite frankly, there's even medical concerns with some of the equipment they use, these backscatter machines. There's lingering doubts over whether these machines are actually safe or if we're being exposed to unhealthy levels of radiation. There's a lot of questions. And, there are 16 or 17 airports nationwide that use private security firms. Big airports, too, San Francisco, St. Louis, those are not small airports. They use private security firms, and I've flown through San Francisco. It's a much more pleasant experience. The agents that are in charge of doing the screening are much more responsive to the passenger, yet they're getting the job done. They are doing the screening aspect that ensures our safety.
Well, why can the private security firms not humiliate us, and TSA is humiliating us?
You know, I think it boils down to the simple, you know, fact of we were talking earlier about pricing in the market. It boils down to the fact that these companies are in business, and if they're in business to provide a service, they also have an obligation to provide and be responsive to customer service, and we see that happening. With TSA, I mean, it's a 55,000-plus employee agency that has just become totally tone-deaf to the concerns of passengers. I mean, we just witnessed this week a woman died because she was, not allowed to fly, but yet she was allowed to fly to the country she was going to. And maybe that's not so much TSA, but if a woman is able to get through security and fly to a destination and not be a health or safety risk to the plane and that flight, then why would she not be allowed to come back? So I think there's a lot of lingering issues. And quite frankly, The private firms do it at a lower cost than TSA. They're more responsive, and they provide equal or better security screenings. And that's according to a report that was done by the House Transportation Committee earlier this year.
So are you calling for abolishing the TSA?
No, we are not calling to abolish TSA. The campaign is called End TSA Tyranny. You can learn more at www.endtsatyranny.com. We're calling for reforms. We believe there is a role for TSA. We believe that role should be to set the security standards that these airports and these airlines should have to have in place to protect our safety as passengers. Now, whether that means the airports can use TSA as the screening component, the actual security component, or to contract with a private firm, as is being done in several airports right now, you know, that's up to the individual airport. It's actually not up to the state or anything like that. It's actually up to each individual airport. And we see more and more airports are expressing an interest in the private firms because they're so fed up with the service that is being provided by the TSA agency.
How does this work then? Do federal dollars pay the private firm?
Yes, it's a federal contract. So it's just like if it was a defense contract, a school contract, it's the same process. So those fees that we are paying as passengers, if you look on a ticket, you will see it, you know, kind of a some still posted as 9/11 security fee, some just posted as security fee, but you will see a security fee on your ticket. All that money goes into one pot in the federal government, and that money is then used to pay for TSA and security when we're flying. So that would be a contract that that company would receive.
We are talking about airline travel and improving our airline travel experiences, talking about a couple of campaigns that our guests group is working on, the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, wanting to end TSA tyranny and wanting to end the practice of airlines hiding fees for luggage and other things. So, what do you think? Do you have any questions about these campaigns? Do you agree, disagree? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What would make your flying experience better? How's it been these days? It's going to be a cloudy day in northern Wisconsin today, sunny in the south. We can expect high temperatures between 28 in the north and 38 in the south. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight with lows in the 20s. Tomorrow turning cloudy with highs ranging from the upper 20s in the north to the mid-40s in the south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, November 28th. Coming up during At Issue with Ben Marins after 3 o'clock, conflict is a natural part of life, which presents us with opportunities for creative solutions, according to Ben's guests after 3 o'clock. They'll discuss approaching conflict openly and with curiosity. That's after 3 this afternoon. Well, we're talking about some conflicts, perhaps, that you have been having with airlines or with TSA at the airports, and welcoming your questions for our guest, Brandon Maxada, who is Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We have lots of calls, so let's go to Alex in Madison first. Hello, Alex.
Hey, good morning. We do fly quite a bit out of the country, and my question would be to the host, or to the guest, if TSA is so bad and private airports are going with the private security, why are they doing that? The price difference, if there is a difference in getting private security to do this, and why isn't this out on more of the mass media that we don't hear about?
Thanks, Alex, for your question. I don't know if it's a case that we don't hear it more about mass media, because I can go online and Google TSA, and you will probably be inundated with stories on television as well as radio and print about the problems with TSA and the complaints with TSA. And not only just about customer service. Since 2001, there have been over 25,000 airport security breaches. So, you know, this is what they're charged to do, and they're still having problems with that high of a number of security breaches.
I'm sorry, does that mean somebody went through the scanner and had something they shouldn't have had, that kind of thing?
Could have had something on their person that they were not supposed to, something in their luggage that they were not supposed to. They could have been in a restricted area that they were not supposed to be in. Recently we've heard a lot of stories about TSA firings, the number of agents who have been fired because of theft, stealing your personal belongings during the security process. Now, these are people who are supposed to be upholding the law and protecting our safety, being fired for breaking the law. So if somebody is able to go through with stealing an iPad, as was, you know, there was a big ABC News story down in Orlando where they actually tracked the iPad to the agent's house, then what's to say that agent can't be bribed to do something bad if, you know, a terrorist wanted to get on board, so on and so forth. So, you know, there are some serious legitimate concerns over the level of security that is being provided. So, you know, I think it's one of those things that I think you don't see more airports now. There's only 16 or 17 that use these private security firms. It's a very simple reason. TSA blocked airports from proceeding with going to private firms. They said you can no longer do this. Until earlier this year, Congress passed a law, which was signed by the president, that said, hold on, we're stopping this practice. If an airport wants to use a private security firm, they can go through the application process. And quite frankly, the kind of the floodgates have opened, and you have even more and more airports, including big giant airports like Orlando, moving toward using a private security firm. DCA, National Airport, is looking at possibly using a private security firm.
All right. So, Alex, did you have a follow-up to that?
Yes. Do the wages that TSA agents make, are they... I mean, in reference to whom they hire, are these people making a decent wage, or are we talking about, you know, doing the Walmart type, employee making only $10 an hour, versus the people that would be working and may be making more money with the private security?
Alex, great question. They do make a comparable wage to private firms. The only difference between the TSA is there when the law was passed, they are not covered under the federal some of the public employee protections. That was kind of a compromise that was struck. So they may not have the full benefits of, say, a federal employee who's a Secret Service agent or a alcohol, tobacco, and firearm agent, to that effect. But in terms of the pay, they make a very competitive wage, especially when you compare it with private firms.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, Brandon, figure out why we can't just reform the TSA agents and their hire better people, train them better, and not necessarily just replace them with private security people.
Well, we're open to both. But we feel that the private firm should definitely be on the table. We feel that that competition, if TSA and this, if they were not, again, we're not saying abolish TSA. TSA has a role, and we believe that role is most definitely in terms of establishing policies and procedures to ensure our safety. But in terms of executing those policies and procedures, we feel there should be competition between private firms and a government agency of TSA, because that's what's going to force them to provide better customer service to us. If they're providing better customer service, they're also going to be providing better safety.
Let's go to Jim in Milwaukee next. Hello, Jim.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for letting me on. See, I just wanted to mention that I had 35 years retired, and I worked in the airline industry as an airline employee. And I used to repair and service all security equipment around the Midwest. And I know the industry quite well. And prior to 9/11, it was all private. We've been this route, and it didn't work. And I'm saying that those private companies tend to hire low-wage, undertrained people. And there was many, many breaches in security over those years, prior to 9/11, prior to the TSA taking it over. And, I understand what you're trying to say, but if my tax dollars are going to solve a problem or an issue, I prefer trained people to do it, and I think the TSA are doing a good job.
Okay. Jim, you raise an excellent point. There was a system in place prior to 9/11, and it did use firms. However, it's kind of like comparing apples and oranges compared to the private firms that are being used now. Back before 9/11, there was not a uniform set of policies and procedures as to what the training that was required of these security agents, as well as a lot of the screening details. That has changed with TSA. That's what TSA has brought to the table in a good way. So these private security firms, they can't cut corners to save money compared to the TSA, the federal agency providing the security. They have to follow the same rules. And they're doing it at a better cost because in just about any industry you want to go through, if not every industry, private industry can always provide a better quality product at a better price than a federal or state agency. I mean, that's a whole other conversation we can have, but, I mean, there have been studies about this, and the studies that have been done on these private firms, they're providing the same level of service in terms of pay and that sort of thing. They are... They're at a better cost to the taxpayer and providing the same level of security, if not even better level of security.
We are talking with Brandon Mixotta. He is Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, talking about a couple of campaigns that the Association for Airline Passenger Rights has going on, one that calls for reforming the TSA, another that calls for airlines to stop hiding fees, and we're welcoming your questions and comments in general about airline travel these days after we check the latest news. We are talking about ways our guests would like to improve our flying experiences, and we are welcoming your questions and your stories, good or bad, about recent airline travel. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Wednesday, November 28th. Our guest is with the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, and we have been talking about a new effort that his group has started to end what he calls unfair and deceptive marketing practices of airlines. And we're talking about his group's national campaign to reform the TSA, or the Transportation Security Administration. The End TSA Tyranny campaign is endorsing the use of private security firms at airports. And we wonder what you think of airline travel these days or these ideas. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Brandon Mixotta is Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights. And I wanted to talk to you, Brandon, a little bit about my last airline experience, and I think there are some universal things here. I was happy to have a direct flight from the Dane County Airport here in Madison to Reagan National in Washington, D.C. Just a couple of weeks ago, I took a brief trip out there to visit a brand new great niece. It was a very nice trip. But one thing I noticed is that nonstop travel seems to be... Those flights are few and far between, and you pay a premium for them. Is that my imagination?
No, it is not your imagination. Unfortunately, one of the things that we see is what is often called the airline the traffic load, which is the number of passengers that the airlines are carrying based on the available seats. That gap is narrowing because airlines are simply canceling or reducing the number of flights that they offer Which, of course, if you'd reduce the number of flights that they offer, that's going to bump up the cost of tickets. I mean, we're looking at the cost of air travel is about 20% higher than last year in some cases. And also, they're getting rid of a lot of these direct flights. Airlines do not make, unless they're going from using a strategy like Southwest, where they only go into to key cities, you know, the airlines, it's harder to fill that plane up if you're going from, say, Madison to Washington, D.C. But if you go from Madison to Philly, you know, while that plane's in Philly, it's able to pick up, you know, people who came from a lot of other smaller areas. They fill the plane up and they go to D.C. So you are definitely seeing a lot less direct flights.
Yeah. I mean, trying to plan a trip to someplace warm in January, I found that it was almost impossible to find a direct flight. I ended up going with an all-inclusive vacation with a charter. It was a lot better to do it that way than try to go from Madison to New Jersey to Jamaica.
Right.
I mean, that didn't make any sense at all. In any case, but the other thing that we were trying to do this a little bit on the cheap, and it was a short trip, just a long weekend. So everybody in my party decided that we're just going to do carry-on luggage. We're not going to pay that baggage fee. And that's what everybody seems to be doing.
You're absolutely right. You know, unless you're flying Spirit Airlines, which charges you for checked baggage or carry-on baggage, you're absolutely right. You see more people trying to bring on bigger bags, which of course slows down the boarding process. It also, you know, makes it harder if you say are only bringing a small duffel bag to find a place for your belongings, because these big bags are taking up more and more space. And you know, quite frankly, you can't blame the consumer because mm-hmm. they're trying to get away with, you know, they thought they paid $250 for a flight, not $350. And if you knew in advance, okay, this is what I'm paying for, you probably mm-hmm. would be a little bit different. I mean, I'm sure you still would have some pretty savvy travelers who would do what they can to get those big bags on. But quite frankly, it's incumbent on the airline staff at the gate agents, to say, Joy, that bag is too big. We have to check it.
Yeah. The other thing, I don't usually do this, so I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention in the past, I guess. But, you know, I had to have my plastic bag with my 3-ounce liquids outside of my carry-on bag. And a lot of people weren't doing that, and it was clogging up the security line. And it just seemed that that's causing a lot more, you know, issues with the security line, with travelers, with, you know, not checking their bags and putting a lot more through that X-ray machine. Isn't that part of the problem?
Well, and that is part of the problem. And this mm-hmm. this comes back to the broader issue that we have, or the broader, you know, message that we're trying to send out to America, and that is the TSA needs to be reformed. There are numerous so-called security techniques that are employed by TSA at the airports, they don't improve security, you know, and among them, taking off your shoes. I mean, we had one incident, with a potential shoe bomber, and it, all of a sudden now everybody has to take their shoes off. Yet the United States is the only country where you got to take your shoes off. And most of the reports that have come out said taking shoes off does not improve airport security. Another example is, you know, have you ever, Joy, when you've gone through TSA, the security line, you're just about to board, and all of a sudden a TSA agent comes up to you and says, we're going to do a random search of your bag and your person, and you got to go through the whole process all over again. Yeah. It has been determined that does not improve security whatsoever. It does nothing other than take limited resources, those TSA agents, away from somewhere else. Yet we continue to do those random spot checks at the gate.
Yeah, no, I haven't had that happen at the gate, but I've seen that happen to people. And on this particular trip, I did get a minor pat down, even though I went through the X-ray machine, whatever the heck that thing's called.
Right.
And I got my hand swabbed for potential explosives or whatever that test
right.
is for.
Right.
Yeah. But you're saying private firms are not going to do the same things that TSA was doing to me?
No, they will. And that gets back to, Jim brought up a very good point, that the firms that were private firms that were used prior to 9/11 did a terrible job. I mean, they were basically a cheerleading squad for the airlines, and they really didn't do true security screening. I mean, the fact that on 9/11, you know, you had how many people board a plane with a box cutter? I mean, that's about as sharp of a weapon as you can imagine. The difference here is with a private security firm, TSA approves and hires the private security companies. The federal government pays for the security, not the local airport. The TSA trains the private screeners. Those workers use TSA protocol and equipment. They even continue to wear TSA uniforms. If you go to, I mentioned earlier that I've flown through San Francisco, they're still in TSA uniforms. And there are on-site supervisors overseeing the operations of the privatized firms. The difference is, because these are private companies, they have demonstrated an ability to be more responsive to the customers' needs and concerns and complaints. In addition, in terms of, again, providing the security, when the House Transportation Committee studied this, they actually found that the private firms were providing security the security at an equal or better level than the TSA itself.
All right, back to phones. Sarah in Madison is with us now. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to question, it seems like the guest is saying that there's a logical link between privatization and better service. And first of all, I think in this case, the customer who's paying and choosing the private service providers are the airports and not the users, which are the travelers. So I don't know if that relationship or that accountability really works as it does in other situations where the customers are the people paying for and using the service. And secondly, the blanket statement that privatization always leads to more competition and better services at the same cost really hasn't held true in other sectors where privatization has gone on for a longer time, like in education. Charter schools, most of them have been shown to not work as well as public schools. And if you look at Milwaukee, the voucher program has shown.
Right, and I don't want to get into all that, Sarah, because
right,
that's going to take us off focus.
Yeah, just the idea that in general privatization leads to better services, it doesn't seem like that is held true. So I'd like to know more about, you know, specifically in this case, what evidence is there? And if there's a citation for these reports, I'd like to look at those too.
Thank you, Sarah.
Well, Sarah, it's all good points, and I never said that privatization always leads to better service. I said in general it will, and you know, you could certainly cite cases as you did where there are the exceptions to the rule, and there are different intricacies that lead to those circumstances. But by and large, private firms private contractors can provide a better service than through a government agency. Your point about the airports being the customer, you're correct. And for an airport to apply for this this opt-out where they can use a private screening company instead of TSA, part of what they use in their determination as to whether or not they want to go down that path is customer feedback from customers at the airport who are saying, we don't like the process that we're going through. And, you know, I've been through airports where the private, or the TSA agents, the actual federal agents, the federal agency does a wonderful job. Wilmington, North Carolina is a place I go to quite frequently. You know, when I fly in and out of there, they are so professional. They do a wonderful job. They're very responsive to the passengers going through. And I've never heard of a single incident where there was a security breach at Wilmington. So, you know, there's a shout out to, you know, those agents down in Wilmington who are doing a wonderful job. But if you look at the track record of TSA, it's not one that I would really go parading around the country saying they're doing an amazing job.
Thank you, Sarah. Jennifer in Stevens Point is with us now. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi. I was just wondering about when I fly, sometimes they cancel the flight with no notification. One time, I think it was American Airlines or one of them, where I got to the airport only to be told that flight was canceled just because I don't know why. But so then I had to scramble to get another flight. As you said, there's no direct flight anywhere. And then, you know, to get to my next flight, and I had to find another flight. How do they do that? How do they get away with that?
Well, Jennifer, there could be several reasons. I mean, there most certainly could be a mechanical reason as to why they cancel the flight, and that does indeed happen. It could be a crew issue. It could be, you know, the federal law mandates how much a pilot can fly, how many hours he or she can fly, the flight crew, how many hours they can fly. It could be that they just don't have the manpower. You know, if there's a delayed flight, they're still technically on the clock. Now, there's an on the clock in terms of when you're actually flying, and there's what they call like a downtime when they're in the airport waiting for their next flight. But both of them still count toward their total hours. It's using a different formula. So if there was a long delay, that flight crew might have exceeded its legally allowed amount of flight time for the week, and therefore the airline can't find a flight crew. And then other times it's just, you know, quite frankly, it could just be a shady decision that they don't think they're going to make the money and they cancel a flight. I mean, we do hear stories of, you know, why are you canceling this flight, and really not being the airline not providing a valid reason or any reason for that matter as to why the flight has been canceled. So it does happen. But, you know, your point, Jennifer, is an excellent one to demonstrate that whereas we believe the market should dictate, you know, how the pricing of flights and a lot of things with respect to flying, you know, flying is a very unique experience. If Joy, you mentioned going to visit your grandniece. You know, if she's across the country and the party or the celebration was the following day, chances are you got one way to get there, unless you're Superwoman and you haven't told everybody. You got to get on a plane. You can't get on a train and get there that quickly. You can't get in a car and get there that quickly. You know, so you have one. You're basically a captive audience to this airline. You're a captive customer. If you want to get from, you know, Madison, Wisconsin to Washington, D.C. and not be a walking zombie when you get to Washington, D.C., you got to get on a plane.
Right. And our flight was delayed by like 2 hours. It was, we were going in the late afternoon, and it ended up being early evening before the plane took off. Apparently, it had some mechanical difficulties where it was originating in Denver.
What
was nice about Frontier, I guess, is that I'm not sure they had to do this, but we were given $50 vouchers on a future ticket on Frontier.
Well, you know, Joy, and that's a perfect comment, because we don't blame airlines for bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
We don't blame airlines for a mechanical problem that should cause a flight to be delayed or a flight canceled. We do, however, hold the airlines responsible and accountable for the treatment of its fare-paying customers when that weather comes,
right,
and cancels a flight, or if there's a, you know, a problem with a wheel or something like that. And that's where we see a lot of the problems. I mean, when you hear stories of people sitting in an airplane on a tarmac in the freezing cold for 9 hours without a working toilet, access to food and water, I mean, that's inhumane. There's no excuse for that. So the airline's not responsible for the weather, but they are responsible for how they're going to treat their passengers when that happens.
Well, we'll take your question or your airline travel story that you'd like to relay at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, mostly cloudy in northern Wisconsin with high temperatures in the upper 20s. It'll be mostly sunny in the southern part of the state with high temperatures in the south in the upper 30s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Should Wisconsin keep or get rid of its same-day voter registration process? That's our big question coming up after 7. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about flying with our guest, who is the executive director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, Brandon McSada. And our next caller is Sheree in Waupun. Hi, Sheree.
Hi, good morning. Thank you to the guest for your advice. I wanted to discuss obese passengers. I happened to read an article yesterday where a woman flew an international flight from America to Hungary, and she was morbidly obese. The airline flew her, but then when it was time to come home, they refused to fly her back. And she ended up passing away because she wasn't able to get home to her doctor, according to, you know, the family. And considering the population size is getting bigger and the seats on the plane seem to be getting smaller in order to pack more passengers in, I wanted maybe to discuss if there's any thoughts of what a person could do in order to keep this type of activity from happening.
Sheree, Joy has actually had me on her program. I think it was last year, Joy, we discussed this very issue. And in that case, you cited this woman was a resident of the Bronx here in New York City. And, you know, what has not been reported very well is she actually purchased 3 seats, not one, not two, three seats. Mm. So she took not only her own comfort, but the comfort of the passengers, would-be passengers next to her, into consideration when she booked that flight. She was able to fly to Hungary to visit family, and when trying to fly home, was denied boarding, even though she had purchased three seats. And what will be interesting to see is a lot of her weight was related to diabetes, severe diabetes, and renal failure. That would therefore fall under what's called the Air Carrier Access Act, which is a law that prohibits the discrimination of against passengers with disabilities. So it'll be very interesting to see how this incident plays out, not only with respect to DOT and whether DOT fines Delta Airlines, but also the court, the litigation that the family has filed. And you're right, we have taken a very strong stance in support of fair treatment of passengers of size, not because we're taking their side over the side of quote-unquote normal-sized passengers. Our philosophy is if we improve travel for passengers of size, we will by virtue be improving travel for all passengers. We're getting bigger as the seats are getting smaller. Those are just simple facts.
Yes. Why did Delta refuse to board this woman if she bought three seats?
They said that that it was a safety hazard. She was a safety hazard. That she was too big to fly. They basically told her she was too big to fly. Again, even though she flew there in the first place and purchased three seats. I mean, we hear a lot of stories of people purchasing two seats. I was even surprised to learn that she had purchased three seats.
Yeah, well, that's tragic. Well, so I guess, Brandon, what advice do you have for folks who might be traveling over this holiday season? Should they encounter problems, who do they call? How do they try to resolve them? What should they do?
Well, you know, I have to say, you know, from your callers, whether it was Alex or Sarah or Jim, you know, they obviously they've flown a lot, or Jim's case, he worked in the industry. They obviously have done their homework. And my advice to passengers is, if you're going to book a ticket, do your homework. If you're going to spend the money and you're going to, go on a trip, make sure you know what you're going to be paying. What are the simple rules, like how soon are you supposed to be at an airport, whether it's a domestic flight versus an international flight. You know, we not only advocate for our rights, we also push for our responsibilities. It is your responsibility as a passenger to do certain things, and we certainly advocate for that. And, you know, if there is indeed a problem at the airport, you know, there's several things you can do. You can ask to speak to an airline customer service representative if it's an issue related to disability and accessibility. Each airport and each airline is supposed to have an accessibility officer that you could request to speak to. You know, if you feel like you're not getting anywhere at the airport on the spot, call the airline and say, hey, I need to speak to somebody, and I need to speak to somebody right away. And then after the experience, you know, you can go online to DOT and file a complaint. Unfortunately, not much is done with those complaints other than a reporting thing, but DOT does follow those complaints to determine, is more regulation needed, or are better policies needed to protect air travelers. So there's a lot of things that you can do, to make sure that your travel experience is a little better. But, you know, the biggest thing is just do your homework in advance.
And if people want to support the hidden fees petition, that is a We the People White House petition?
Yes.
And
if they go to the White House website, and there's the We the People petition, you can do the search there, and they're trying to get 25,000 signatures by Christmas Day.
All right, well, I guess we'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy. Have a good holiday.
You too. Brandon McSatta, Executive Director of the Association for Airline Passenger Rights, which advocates for fair customer service and accessibility standards in the airline industry and improved passenger satisfaction. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production. And thanks to Amanda Magnus for on-air direction. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.